Post Brand Flakes presents Believe It or Not. Again, Post 40% Brand Flakes bring you Bob Ripley with more of his amazing Believe It or Not with B.A. Rolfe and his orchestra and lovely Linda Lee. Yes, sir, life is swell when you keep well. And say what a really swell cereal Post Brand Flakes are. So crunchy. And what a wonderful nut-like flavor. And then those extra benefits. The benefits of Bran so many of you may need to help you keep fit naturally. So why don't you join the millions who enjoy Post Bran Flakes every day for their delicious flavor, for their extra benefits. Yes, life is swell when you keep well. And here's that friendly, frank, free-handed fryer of fruitful, fretted, friction-fraught, fright-fronted phrase, Believe It or Not, Bob Ripley.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the program tonight. These are historic days. Last week, four men gathered around a green-covered table in Munich, Germany, and never in all history have four men been watched with more anxiety by the eyes of the entire world. Now let me draw back the curtain of time. Only 26 years. It's 1912. The place is still Munich. As our scene opens, a ragged young man with his clothes in tatters timidly enters the shop of a little Jewish house painter. He knocks at the door and waits tremblingly in the doorway.
Please, mein Herr, are you Herr Gustav Heller, the owner of this shop?
Well, what is it?
I would like to ask if you could give me any kind of employment, anything.
Are you a painter? Have you got references?
No, I'm a stranger in Germany, and I...
Well, why should you come here to me?
I'm an Austrian, and I heard that you, gracious sir, are an Austrian, too. Oh, give me a chance. I'll work for my food, as my countryman, won't you? Please.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, please, if I don't get some work, the police will deport me back to Austria. Oh, I want to stay in Germany. I'll never forget this favor.
All right, I'll take you. Maybe I can make a painter out of you. What's your name?
My name is Adolf. Adolf Hitler.
The year is 1898. The place, the little town of Coppentrost in southern France. A 14-year-old baker's boy is loading a donkey cart with bread and rolls and rolling it along a narrow cobble street. He is shouting his wares.
Fresh rolls, fresh bread, fresh nice rolls here. Fresh rolls, fresh.
Look out there, look! Oh, monsieur, let me help you up. Are you hurt?
No, I'm all right, but I'm worried about you. I'm not a very good bicycle rider, otherwise I would not have bumped into you. I'll pay for the damage. It was my fault.
Oh, no, monsieur, I will not let you pay.
Oh, but you must let me do something. What do you want most?
What do I want? The impossible. I want to be an educated man, not a baker.
Yeah, so you would like to be an educated man. Well, I am a professor at the Lyon High School.
Oh, really?
You come and see me tomorrow, and we will make arrangements for your education. I am Edouard Herriot.
Oh, I have the same Christian name as you. I am Edouard too, monsieur. Edouard Daladier.
And as a result of this strange meeting, both of these men, Edouard Herriot and Edouard Daladier, became prime ministers of France. Now, let's move the clock forward. The time is 1937. The place, London. Our scene is a beautiful lake in St. James Park. Suddenly, a splash. Loud cries for help are heard. We see a man pushing his way through the crowd.
What's the matter?
There's a young fellow falling in the lake. I think he's drowning.
Good heavens, what are you all waiting for? Here, hold my umbrella.
Oh, my.
Look at that, they're running in
after him. Oh, boy, the old bloke. A fat fellow he is.
Here now, what's happened? I'm a reporter from the Daily Express.
A young fellow falls in the lake and an old gentleman comes along, dives in and saves his life. Blimey, what an hero. Look at him, walking off there, dripping wet in his top coat and cutaway, like nothing happened. I wonder who he is.
Oh, it's just like him. That's the way he does everything. Never thinks of himself.
Come on, tell us who it is.
That's our own Prime Minister, Neville Chamberlain.
What a story!
And now the time is 1906. The place, the city of Geneva in Switzerland. Two policemen are patrolling their appointed beat along a deserted alley.
C'est la vie. At 2 o'clock in the morning, some people sleep, and at 2 o'clock in the morning, some people are policemen like us, no?
Look here. Here is something. A man's leg sticking out of this rubbish container.
Huh?
Let me see.
It belongs to some fellow in there. Hello, you. Get up there.
What is it? What are you doing sleeping here? Why don't you go home?
But I have no home.
Ah, you are not Swiss. You are Italian. You have to come with us.
Please don't arrest me, signori. I don't want to go back to Italy. They'll put me in the army. I don't want to fight. I'm a pacifist.
You will have to come along. What is your name?
Benito Mussolini.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, those four men were the same four men who sat around the green-covered table in Munich only last week, and upon whose shoulders rests the future of Europe and the fate of the world. Believe it or not.
Rolf and his orchestra with lovely Linda Lee turn to Irving Berlin for inspiration and entertain our post-Brandblake's audience with Change Partners.
Must you dance every dance with the same fortunate girl? You have danced with her since the music began. Won't you change partners and dance with me? Must you dance quite so close with your lips touching her face? Can't you see I'm longing to be in the place? Won't you change partner and dance with me? Ask her to sit this one out, and while you're alone, I'll tell the waiter to tell her he's wanted on the telephone. You've been lost in her arms ever since, heaven knows when. Won't you change partner and then? You may never want to change partners again. you change partners and friends. You may never want to change partners again, ever again.
Life is swell when you keep well. Yes, sirree, folks. And here's a fellow who knows it.
You bet I know it. Here it is Monday night. Okay, I've done a good day's work and I feel mighty happy about it. I've another big day coming up tomorrow and I'm raring to go. Yep. No matter how you look at it, friends, life is lots of fun when you're feeling top.
Or again, as we put it, life is swell when you keep well. And say, isn't that just about the size of it? When you're feeling well, on your toes, it's a wonderful old world, full of excitement and full of fun. And folks, everybody knows the benefits of bran. Well, every day, millions of mothers all over the country give their family these benefits in a really delicious cereal, Post Bran Flakes. For Post Bran Flakes do more than bring you the benefits of bran. Here's a cereal with a swell flavor you're bound to enjoy. You'll smack your lips over these crunchy golden flakes. They're so tempting and different. So tomorrow morning, why don't you pitch into a bowl of delicious Post Bran Flakes? The cereal that's more than a cereal. Let the whole family enjoy Post Bran Flakes regularly every morning for their wonderful flavor and their extra benefits. Believe me, you'll agree yourself. Life is swell when you keep well.
Yes, sir, next Wednesday, the world's champion New York Yankees meet the fighting Chicago Cubs. And this year's Yankee team has been rated one of the greatest hitting teams in all history. And the one person closer to the mighty Yankee bats than anyone else is standing here beside me now. Ladies and gentlemen, the most envied boy in the world today, the bat boy for the New York Yanks, Timmy Sullivan.
Good evening, everyone.
Timmy, tell our listeners just what a bat boy does.
Well, I take care of more than 150 bats and keep them in good condition for the ball players. All the bats are different.
Yes, but who uses the heaviest bat?
Joe DiMaggio, and he's knocked out 32 homers with it.
Well, how about Gary?
He's using a lighter bat this year.
I notice he's been hitting lighter, too.
Yeah, but he whammed out 29 home runs, though.
But who does use the lightest bat?
Flash Gordon. He's the lightest man on the team, but boy, can he smack him. 24 homers this year.
Well, hitting him like that, it's no wonder the Yankees have made 174 home runs in one season. And, Timmy, I know ball players are notoriously superstitious. How about the Yanks?
For one thing, no player will let another player use his bat.
No.
Lefty Gomez is the only exception. They don't mind letting Lefty have their bat.
Why?
Because he seldom hits anything anyway. But the worst piece of bad luck is lying one bat across another on the ground.
Yes, I remember that from the days when I used to play ball. Tell us, Timmy, do the ball players of today still rub their bats with a bone?
They still do, Mr. Ripley. Most players on the Yankee Club polish their bats with a large ham bone, which I bring from the butchers. They think it hardens the bat.
Timmy, during the 3 years you've been with the Yankees, they've won 2 World Series. I think you're a good luck mascot.
Well, I don't like to boast, Mr. Ripley, but I think we'll take those Cubs 4 straight and win the 3rd World Series in a row.
And good luck to you, Timmy, and may the best team win. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard from Timmy Sullivan, bat boy and mascot of the New York Yankees, who on Wednesday entered their 3rd straight World Series. And if the Yanks win this time, they will be the first team in baseball history to win 3 World Series in a row. Believe it or not. One of the most delightful experiences that a man can know is that of telling a story to an eagerly listening child. But in no case has a story told solely for a child's enjoyment had such an amazing history as the one which I would like to tell you about now. The time, July the 4th, 1862, the place the Cherwell River, where it flows softly through the little town of Oxford, England. It's a hot summer afternoon. As our scene opens, we find Charles Dogson, a young teacher of mathematics, rowing a small boat lazily along the stream, and his companion is a little 10-year-old girl called Alice Liddell.
Uncle Charles?
Yes?
I want you to tell me another story.
Another story? What kind of a story shall it be this time, Alice?
This time I want a funny story with lots and lots of nonsense in it. I love nonsense, Uncle Charles. Don't you?
Yes, Alice. Nonsense is the most sensible thing in the world. Let me see. A nonsensical story with a little girl in it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call her...
You'll call her Alice, if you please.
Oh, of course. Shall we start the story like this? Alice was beginning to get very tired. Once or twice she had peeped into the book her sister was reading.
Rule 42. All persons more than a mile high to leave the court.
I'm not a mile high, said Alice.
You are, said the king.
And the queen said, you're nearly 2 miles high.
That's the oldest rule in the book, said the king.
That's wonderful, Uncle Charles. I'd like to be a mile high.
You would? Oh, Alice, I hadn't realized how late it is.
Oh, Mother won't mind. She knows how I love stories. Oh, Uncle Charles.
Yes?
I shall hate the summer to be over because we won't be able to go rowing anymore. And then I won't hear your stories. Oh, Mother, I'm so happy. Look what Uncle Charles gave me for Christmas.
A book? Why, how nice.
But, Mother, it isn't an ordinary book. Look, it has pictures and conversations. And Uncle Charles wrote it for me himself in his own handwriting. It's the stories he used to tell me last summer.
I think that was awfully sweet of him.
And look what he wrote on it. A Christmas gift to a dear child in memory of a summer day. It's about a little girl a mile high and a white rabbit and a mad hatter and a walrus that talks. It's the book full of the funniest things. I'm going to keep it forever.
Sixty-six years went by. The time is now February 1928. Alice is now a woman 78 years old. As our scene opens, we find her entering Sotheby's, the famous London auctioneer.
Yes, madam, what can I do for you?
I have a manuscript here. I would like you to sell it for me.
Well, may I see it?
Yes, certainly. Here it is. Hmm. I never thought I would part with this manuscript. I've treasured it all my life. But time hasn't been kind. 2 sons killed in the war. I have many obligations. That's why I brought it here.
Hmm. There we are. Now, let's see. A Christmas gift to a dear child in memory of a summer's day. Alice was beginning to get tired. Why, it couldn't be.
Oh, can you sell it for me?
Can I sell it? Why, this manuscript is a great literary treasure. I shall arrange for an auction as soon as possible, madam.
Now, how much have I bid for lot 319? 5,000 pounds.
5,000 pounds, I bid. 5,000, I've offered. I bid 5,000 pounds.
12,500 pounds.
12,500 pounds, I bid. Well, here you are.
15,500 pounds bid.
15,400 pounds.
15,400 pounds. 15,400 pounds, I bid for the first time. For the second time, 15,400 pounds. For the third and last time, do I hear any more? Sold for 15,400 pounds to Dr. Rosenbach. Congratulations, Dr. Rosenbach.
And so, one of the greatest literary treasures was sold for the record price of £15,400, or $77,000. The buyer of this manuscript has done me the honor of being my guest tonight. He is the foremost collector and dealer of rare books in the world today. His transactions have never been equaled in magnitude, and in the drama I've just presented, he played his own part as a successful bidder at the auction. Ladies and gentlemen, I present Dr. A.S.W. Rosenbach.
Good evening.
Good evening, Dr. Rosenbach. You paid $77,000 for that manuscript. Well, won't you tell our listeners, what was that manuscript?
It was the original manuscript of what is probably the most beloved story in the world today, Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland. Well, I would say that that manuscript should be priceless. You know, Dr. Rosenbach, in many cases I find the stories about books are real, believe it or not, themselves.
As a matter of fact, I have a believe it or not that happened in your own town of Amaranek.
You have? I like to hear it.
Mr. John C. Clay, yeah, who was a neighbor of yours, happened to read a magazine article of mine in which I told of buying the signature of Button Gwinnett for $21,500.
Oh, yes, I know. Button Gwinnett was one of the original signers of the Declaration of Independence, wasn't he?
After reading my article, Mr. Clay remembered that his family had in its possession an old paper with Gwinnett's signature. After a long search, he found the letter in one of the outhouses on his farm.
Well, how much did you pay Mr. Clay for this signature, Dr. Rosenbach?
I paid $51,000 for it because it was dated in July 1776, only 8 days after the declaration was signed.
Yes.
2 days after Mr. Clay found this wonderful signature, the building in which it had been stored for years burned to the ground, believe it or not.
And so, if he hadn't read your article, that signature, and incidentally, $51,000 would have gone up in smoke.
Exactly.
Dr. Rosenbach, I thank you for coming here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard from the world's foremost collector and dealer in rare books, whose collection is valued at millions and includes some of the rarest treasures of the present and the past. Dr. Rosenbach paid as high as $106,000 for the Gutenberg Bible, $77,000 for a manuscript of Alice in Wonderland, and $51,000 for two words: the signature of Button Gwinnett. Believe it or not.
B.A. Ralph and his orchestra use a syncopated stethoscope to find out what goes on here in my heart. Thank you. important special announcement. As all of you know, Bob Ripley has been coming here with his interesting Believe It or Not for over a year without interruption. All during the summer, when most of us were taking it easy, Bob and Linda Lee and B.A. Rolfe and the rest of the folks on the show have been right on the job week in and week out. But now the time has come for them all to take their well-deserved vacation. Bob, just what do you plan to do,
Well, the time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sailing. Lord, the time has come for me to go traveling again.
Well, Bob, we'll miss you, but I hope you have a grand vacation.
Believe it or not, I never had a vacation in all my life.
What are you going to do then?
I'm going on another, believe it or not, expedition in search of strange and unusual things around the world.
Traveling sounds like a swell vacation to me.
Well, sometimes it's hard work to get to some of the out-of-way places, Linda. However, after 2 years on the air, I think I'm going to try and enjoy myself this time.
Where are you going, Bob?
Well, I'm going around the world for one thing. You know, Linda, I've located a set of sextuplets, all living.
You mean six living children born at once?
Yes.
Gee, that beats the Dion quintuplets.
And I've arranged to go on an expedition in Upper Burma to find a tribe of men with tails. And the white crow, which is king of a nation, I'm going to try to bring back the golden mummy of an emperor. And if any better, believe it or not, can be found, Linda, I'm going to go out and try to find them.
I'm sure you will, Bob, and good luck to you.
And, Bob, the makers of Post Brand Flake sincerely hope that you have a mighty good time and a really good rest. And that certainly goes for you, Linda, and UBA, and every last one of the folks who've helped to make this program so enjoyable. And at the same time, thanks to all of you for the many new friends you've helped win for Post Brand Flake. Bob, this is the time for your usual good night. But on behalf of all of us who worked together so happily for the last 65 weeks, I'd like to take over here.
Okay, Pierre.
We'd like to give you our kind of goodbye, a musical one, to carry over until we welcome Bob Ripley back in January. So, Bob, to you, from Linda Lee, Fort Bond, and the Orchestra Boys, the cast, and all of us who have helped to work with you, good luck, old man, and God bless you. Till we meet again. One more important announcement. Starting next Monday over most of these stations at the same time, Al Pierce and his gang will be back on the air. Be sure to tune in next Monday night at this same time. This is the National Broadcasting Company.